Welcome to the first episode of the relaunched WrestleWolf. I'm your host, Damien Gibson. I am a wrestling tragic, as you would say here in Australia. I'm also a published wrestling journalist and a published author. So I suppose, what are my qualifications? Well, I'm obsessed with wrestling and I kind of have some idea of how stories should be told. And that has kind of always been the way that I've looked at wrestling, the way that I've done this podcast in other versions and other wrestling podcasts with friends. The thing that I desperately kind of want each week is for somebody to talk about the actual wrestling or the wrestling and promos that happen each week. There is so much fucking opinion and opinion-based... well, not even opinion, because this show will be opinion-based, but I suppose what I'm talking about is conjecture. There's a lot of conjecture, a lot of rumor-mongering, a lot of fantasy booking, a lot of... I mean, the long and the short of it, bullshit. A lot of bullshit that gets put out there as content. And in the past, I've talked about who those people are and why I don't like them and stuff. I don't even do that anymore. I saw Kevin Smith the other day talk about how he'd had some near-death experiences, and off the back of that, he only just wanted to talk about the things that he loved. And I love wrestling, and in particular, I love AEW. So I'm going to try... this has been my New Year's resolution to myself, is to relaunch this podcast and try and do a quick weekly wrap-up of what happened on Dynamite and Collision. Now, I might do some New Japan stuff. I might delve into WWE, maybe GCW, maybe MLW, maybe some Dragon's Gate, Rev Pro, maybe some Renegades of Wrestling down here in Australia. I don't know, but what I do know is that I watch AEW every week, and I love what they do. And I think that's the other thing that's been important to me, is that someone who knows their shit, and I know that sounds a little arrogant, but I do, trying to counterweight just the relentless wave of bullshit that gets written about with AEW. I mean, it's beyond a joke now. I mean, there is a whole cottage industry that subsists on the back of talking poorly about AEW. And the dumbest thing about that is that it will become a self-fulfilling prophecy, because if you have dozens, hundreds, you know, whatever the number is of so-called experts out there on social media talking about how terrible a product AEW is, and we've seen this over the last couple of years, it has an effect. I've been watching the product. It's not any better or worse than it was 2.5-3 years ago, where it was probably at its peak so far. The roster is better. There are some toxic people who are no longer with the company anymore. They seem to have a clear idea of what they want to do story-wise, except for a couple of things which we'll get into in a minute. So the constant fear-mongering that that sort of is just engulfs anything AEW does is fucking tiresome. It's tiring for me. I can't engage in any kind of fun on the internet. I don't subscribe to any YouTube channels anymore to do with wrestling. I don't listen to any podcasts to do with wrestling anymore. I don't follow anyone on Blue Sky or TikTok. I don't follow wrestlers. I literally just watch AEW and GCW and New Japan, and it has really improved my, and I've got some mates that I talk wrestling with, and that has really improved, you know, my enjoyment of it. But each week I would watch the shows and I would be like, man, it would be nice to just have someone who's slightly analytical to go through the shows and just talk about what's good and what's bad, what's working, what's not working. Not in comparison to WWE, not any of that, just as, you know, as a piece of work on its own. So that's what we're going to do. So we'll start with Dynamite and then we'll get into Collision. This week's Dynamite, I think it's fair to say there's some hit and misses. We started off with Will Ospreay and Brian Cage. A lot of big names, a lot of front loading happening on episodes of things at the moment, which makes sense given the viewership and audiences and all that kind of thing. And putting Will Ospreay at the front of the show is going to get people to watch. I still think if you put him at the back end of the show, people are going to watch more of it. But anyway, Don Callis points to a Jumbotron to show Kenny has been beaten down before the match even gets started. Don jumps off comms at one point and beats down Will, which was nice. Archer comes in for a distraction. Archer knocked Ospreay's foot off the bottom rope because Will was using it as a rope break. Will flips Cage into Archer. There's a couple of botched spots here before, which is weird for Will, but there were a couple before Ospreay gets the pin. Archer and Cage start to beat Ospreay down after the win for Will. Kenny comes down for a save with a chair. Then Fletcher and Takeshi come to the ring and beat the two stars down to the boos of the crowd, and a chant of "fuck you, Callis" breaks out. The ending here probably went a little too long. My rating score is out of 10, so I'm going to give each segment a rating, and I gave this 7.9 out of 10. I understand. There's just little things that I think need to be improved with AEW at the moment. I think the Will and Kenny sort of mega powers combined storyline is cool. I think just like in this instance, there was it just lingered on too long. There was just too the beatdown went on too long. It took too long for Kenny to get to the ring. Then the beatdown on Kenny and Will went for too long. It needs to be, you know, we need to expedite this stuff. I don't buy that attention spans are any longer or shorter than they were 15, 20 years ago. I think that's all bullshit. I think that's a demeaning thing that is pumped out in the media to make us think that we're dumber than we actually are. But there's still a need for brevity in storytelling. And even though they're onto a good story here with Kenny and Will, I suppose breaking free of Don Callis and realizing that through their shared experiences of working under this horrible man, that they can work together to finally be free of Don Callis from their lives, which I'm looking forward to seeing. I will be in Brisbane to watch the pay-per-view, and I can't wait to see this match, Takeshita and Fletcher versus Ospreay and Kenny fucking Omega. Next up, we had a promo. Hangman's looking for Swerve and bumps into MJF. Now, I thought this was really stupendously fantastic. And there's little glimpses of this from AEW, and then it disappears. And I don't know who's in control of creative for this stuff, or whether it's the wrestlers themselves that come up with it, and that's why you only see it in certain segments. But the Hangman, MJF bumping into each other and then crossing over, so you get a tiny bit of Hangman's story, and then you get MJF cutting a promo straight to camera. I love it for numerous reasons. So you're essentially telling two stories in one promo. You're setting up the fact that Hangman and MJF exist in the same world, and this is something that could happen later on down the line. They don't seem to like each other very much. And then it makes sense. The camera is there, and MJF is going to speak to a camera if it's in front of it. for people who bang on about how terrible AEW is, there's no storytelling and it's all wrestling, no story. Well, watch this promo and tell me that there's no stories going on. There's about four stories going on at once and they're being told well. So that's bullshit. There's something that can be dispelled right there. It doesn't happen all the time, but it doesn't happen all the time in WWE either. So I think we can just start to dispel these assertions that just because they're just tired dot points that get put out, you know, every Thursday. Next up, we had a promo from Powerhouse Hobbs. He hasn't been cleared from injury, but he'll be, but he will be back soon, and he'll be looking for Big Bill when he gets back. Sometimes these sort of like big boy stories only happen because it's a couple of big boys, and there isn't really anything else there. There definitely seems to be something here between Hobson and Big Bill. I think both of them, I've actually been blown away by Big Bill or the Redwood or Big Cass or however you, because he was a, you know, when he was with Enzo in WWE, he was, I wouldn't say a liability, but on the old podcast we used to do, we used to talk about how he was definitely a Vince guy, but no one else liked him. And I probably owe an apology to WWE because they saw stuff that I just didn't see at the time. His promos are great. The learning tree stuff that, you know, half the population seems to hate, not sort of realizing that that's the point. And I think there, if you compare the learning tree with the Death Riders, there's two different types of heat going on there. And I'll get to that when we speak to the Death Riders in a little bit. But as much as everyone's like, oh, the learning tree sucks, it's a shitty gimmick, it's a shitty gimmick, it's a shitty gimmick. Well, first and foremost, I'd like to hear why people think it's a shitty gimmick. I think I've been around watching this stuff long enough to know that things are secular. And at the moment, Jericho is someone that people don't want to see. This happened with John Cena, happened with Ric Flair, happened with, well, Hulk Hogan is a different story, but Triple H, Randy Orton, people who are around for Christian Cage, the people who've been around for Edge, people who've been around for a really long time, they have troughs and peaks. And right now Jericho is someone that I think a lot of people aren't happy to see around. I also think the AEW audience can hurt its own product in ways where it's like, well, I want what I want now. You know, like I want Daniel Garcia to be, I'm just using Daniel Garcia as an example, but, you know, I want Daniel Garcia to be heavyweight champion now, and people like Chris Jericho are getting in the way of it. Not really understanding the reality of the business. You know, I've seen it happen in everyday life where I say, hey, do you want to watch this AEW pay-per-view with me? And mates go, who's in AEW again? And then you reel off, you know, Bryan Danielson, Chris Jericho, and then it happens without fail. Oh, Chris Jericho, yeah, cool. Because they know who he is. They know who he is. They know they're going to be entertained. You know, so that's why Chris Jericho is still in the promotion. That's why Chris Jericho is still in some of the top spots. Because when you put him there, people show up to watch. And the learning tree gimmick, and I've said this about almost every gimmick that Jericho has done since AEW started, is specifically designed to get the people over who are in the faction. Daniel Garcia is one of those guys. Daniel Garcia was in a faction with Chris Jericho. He was a heel the whole time. He had the stupid dance going on and stuff. And then he broke away from Chris Jericho. And that was the beginning of Daniel Garcia rising up the ranks. Because he was learning how to do TV from Chris Jericho. He was learning how to come up with gimmicks. He was learning how to find out who he was. And now he's Daniel Garcia, mid-card champion. And that's what he's doing with Big Bill. That's what he's doing with the Bad Apple. I've forgotten his actual wrestling name. But anyway, I digress. Claudio Castagnoli versus Jeff Jarrett. Anyone who knows me knows that I am bored by Castagnoli. His theme is fantastic, though. Yuta comes to the ringside in this match for a distraction. He puts a steel chair in the ring and then distracts the ref. Claudio goes to use the chair but misses. Mox appears and hits the paradigm shift on Jeff Jarrett. Claudio gets a pin. The crowd chant Double J. MJF's music hits, goes to speak to him into his mic, and then picks up Jeff Jarrett and hits a clothesline on him, kisses his ring to the camera, drops the mic, and off he goes. I've given this 7.2 out of 10. Most of this score came from when MJF walked down to the ring. The guy makes a huge difference to AEW television. The Jeff Jarrett MJF feud is for some reason something that I want to see more of. I can't really explain to you why. I've never been a Jeff Jarrett fan. I've never hated him the same way other people seem to, but I've never really shown, I've never really cared about Jeff Jarrett, but I am interested in this story. So like to see more of that. Ricochet does a promo, accuses TK of bullying him. I've given this 6 out of 10. It's just a basic good promo. Then Ricochet versus AR Fox. Ricochet wins this pretty easily. He brings out the golden scissors. Swerve comes out for the save because him and AR Fox are best mates again now after last week. Ricochet uses Fox as a human shield with his scissors up to Fox's neck to leave the ring. I've never seen that before. I actually thought that was pretty cool. This was all a bit mundane. It's more of the same with Swerve versus Ricochet, which I am very much looking forward to, and I think these guys have done a really good job. I think there was a much better promo on Collision, which we'll get to in a bit. Just everything was a bit flat on this Dynamite. But anyway, 6.2 out of 10. Most of that's for the alt scissors to the throat. Mox promo. This promo came from a 20-minute interview that he put on YouTube with his wife Renee during the week, which I actually didn't mind the YouTube video clip, whatever piece of content. Now this is probably where I will speak about the Death Riders and maybe a little bit of what I think is wrong with AEW at the moment as far as not sort of catching fire or igniting the imagination of the wrestling public. I think there was some momentum with this initially. When they put the bag over Bryan Danielson's head and almost killed him, it definitely put him out of commission. They had something. And if the dirt sheets are to be believed, the something that was going to happen was that Shane McMahon was going to come and be, I don't know. You know, there's always sort of invasion angles. Since New Japan did it back in the day, it was happening in the 50s and 60s in Japan, but there's been invasion angles with different promotions for decades. Obviously, NWO and WCW is probably the most notable. And then they tried to do the same thing with ECW with WWE and so on and so forth. And I think that's probably what was going to happen here. It was going to be some sort of takeover thing with Shane O'Mac or whatever. That's cooled or it's not happening. I don't think it's going to happen. It doesn't seem. There's been absolutely 0% talk about it. So if that was the case and this is what they've come up with on the fly, you could probably be a little more forgiving of what's going on here with this story. It's just too repetitive. And you think that Brian lost the belt in November last year, and it's now February. So we're getting close to four and a half months of every week. Sometimes 2-3 times on the same show, Mox and the guys come out, they beat down the good guys, and they go on their merry way. You need to, if you're going to be, I suppose what I'm saying is, if you're going to try and do long-term storytelling like this, there needs to be an overall structure. Like, so we're getting from point A to point B, but there needs to be little road stops along the way. And it feels like those, to me, it feels like a story where they do have an A to B story. You know, so it's like, okay, Death Riders take over AEW, and then blah, blah comes and beats Moxley to save AEW from the big bad Death Riders. That's fine. That is fine. That is good wrestling storytelling. But why? I suppose that's the other thing as well. What is the what is the motivation for Moxley to be doing this? Why is it not just enough for him to be AEW champion? Now, he did try to sort of address some of that in this promo, but it came across to me as if it had been done sort of on the fly, on the back of reading Reddit comments or TikTok comments, like, and seemed almost sort of like, I don't know, like pissed off that he had to sort of address the fact that people didn't like this storyline. Like, it, when Mox was cutting those promos, it didn't feel like a character. It felt like Jon Moxley being annoyed that the wrestling public, you know, that the wrestling internet, for the first time in maybe 15 years, maybe in his whole career, sort of not liking something that he's doing. And but this time he can't blame the creative in WWE. He can only blame himself. The audience is saying this is shit. And I have tried to hang in there. I'm always one who talks about long-term storytelling. You've only got to see what's happening over at the Distinguished Competition in WWE. They've been telling the same story with Roman and everything around Roman for 5 years. Now, I think Mox has seen that and gone, we should be doing that here. That's what this should be. But that only happens if there's tension. And at the moment, there is no tension, really, because we're being taught through the visual storytelling that's happening here that, well, the Death Riders are going to beat down any of your guys unless it's Will Ospreay, Kenny Omega, or maybe Bryan Danielson. One of the only three that could somehow stop this from happening. Jay White's kind of involved at the moment. Maybe he could come back. Maybe he gets beaten down. Maybe he could come back. Maybe Darby Allin. So that side of it is not the worst, but to just get up, you know, on YouTube and sort of say, you don't need a reason as to, you don't, the promo essentially was, you don't need a reason. You don't need to know why I'm doing what I'm doing. And that was the moment where I was like, okay, I'm off this story, because to me, this promo suggests that you don't know what you're doing and you've been called out and now you're pissed off about it. And so you're just going to double down and keep doing more of the same thing. And the end of this week's shows was more of the same. It kind of is, you know, I've talked about this on other podcasts where it feels like a year 8 all-boys school drama class where it just ends with an all-in fight, you know, because they don't know how to end the scene any other way. So it's just like, oh, and then we fight, miss. So there's no, like, this is nothing there. It's just like, well, we're just going to keep beating down all the good guys, and then eventually the good guy will come along and decimate it. Or maybe it'll be a collection. You know, maybe it'll be Will and Kenny and Darby. Maybe it'll be the Elite. They'll come back and regain control of AEW. as the good guys, you know, as a face elite. Who knows? And I think people would be prepared to put up with the length of this story if things were happening. Like, you know, if the story was moving along each week, but it's just not. Nothing. It's sort of like 1 month there again, you know. 1 month John Moxley's up against Darby Allin and Daniel Garcia, and then, you know, he kills Darby Allin and Daniel Garcia gets distracted by Adam Cole's boys. And so the next week it's Edge and FTR, or Copeland and FTR, and he'll beat them down. And then the month after that it'll be Kenny and Will, maybe, and he'll beat them down. And the other problem with this story is that it's taking up a lot of airtime, so it's not allowing other stories to breathe, which is a problem. If your major story is taking up, you know, 20% of airtime and it's not good, that's not going to get people coming back. So it is a problem for AEW, and supposedly Mox is like heading the creative on this. That's from the dirt sheet, so I don't know that for sure. But it's another one of these moments where Tony Khan's leadership is going to be essential, because the thing that we know about Tony is that he, unlike any other promoter in the history of wrestling, he pays attention to the internet more than Vince McMahon, more than Triple H, more than anyone at TNA, definitely more than New Japan, maybe not more than GCW, but he definitely listens to what's going on the internet, and there's nothing really good being said about the Death Riders at the moment. And I just think if you could get some help, I'm not saying you have to scrap the story completely. I'm not saying at Revolution you just give Copeland the belt and go from there. Because if you were to do that, you basically have to disband the Death Riders, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. Moxley's been in a faction basically the whole, almost, well, he's been in a faction for the last 2-3 years with people that I would like to see him wrestle. I'd like to see him and Claudio wrestle. I'd like to see him and Pac wrestle. Wheeler Yuta just is constantly in the main event picture because he's friends with Claudio and Mox, and I just don't think he's worthy of that. So there's a lot of issues here with the Death Riders. I think the major one for me is a one of motivation. There was a little bit in this promo of like, I want to, you know, it's combat by fire. It's, you know, steel by fire. Like, the only way to harden the steel of these warriors is through the fire of battle. Okay, that's fine, you know, and I want to leave a legacy here in AEW. I want to leave 1,000 John Moxleys behind me. Wouldn't it make more sense to have an open challenge then? Do you know what I mean? Or, I mean, maybe not an open challenge, but something like that. Because those motives are relatively noble, but your actions to attain that goal are dastardly. So the motivations don't match the actions. And I think that's why people are getting frustrated, because there are, even if people don't know why they don't like a story, they know that they don't like it, and it's usually because of small, they're not small mistakes, they're usually because of mistakes like this. And then just to get back to comparing them to the learning tree, the next segment, Redwood says he heard Jericho, he had heard Jericho's criticisms and had made him proud. by taking out big Will Hobbs, Powerhouse Hobbs. Jericho says he's not happy and says next time he needs to make him really proud. And then he sets up a match with the Outrunners for him and the Bad Apple. Now, what this promo went for, a minute and a half. And he told the story carrying on from the week before. So it's Big Bill hasn't seen Jericho because beforehand Jericho was not happy with him because he had lost to Will Hobbs the week before. So he goes out to basically, you know, prove his dad wrong and get his dad's love and attention. And so he beats the shit out of Powerhouse Hobbs, injures him, puts him on the sidelines, comes back to Jericho and says, hey, look what I did. Aren't I great? Jericho goes, yeah, it's okay. But, you know, you could have done a lot better. And then you see Big Bill's face in the background of this promo trying to still stand by his leader, but then also pissed off and confused about what's happening. There's so much more story being told in a minute than the 20 minutes previously, plus the 20 minutes that Moxley put out on YouTube during the week. So John Moses had 40 minutes to explain to me what's going on with this story, and I'm probably 2% the wiser. Chris Jericho's had a minute to continue his story, and I'm even more up to date with what's going on within his faction, what's happening with him, and what's happening with Big Bill, and what's happening with Powerhouse Hobbs. So there's essentially three angles of the one story being told within a minute. And so when I was talking earlier about the difference between the Learning Tree and the Death Rider storyline and why Chris Jericho is so valuable to the organization, it's not just the fact that people see Chris Jericho's name and go, oh, fuck, I know him. It's also this stuff. The guy's been doing this stuff since 1993. So he knows what he's doing, you know? Anyway, next up we had Jay White versus Wheeler Yuta. Yuta sucks chance from the get-go. Yuta jumps out of the ring. He's doing that sort of Miz type stuff. More Yuta sucks chance. Jay wins this match, and then does another Blade Runner after the bell. Death Riders come out for the save. Cope's music hits. Rated FTR hit the ring for the save. You're hearing a pattern here. Dax cuts a promo and challenges Mox and Claudio to a street fight on Collision. All up, this is 7.2 out of 10 for me. So Jay White winning, great. Jay White being involved with Cope and getting on board here, I think is good. There is some building of Jay White going on here. Edge and FTR together, fine. Or Cope, sorry. Cope and FTR here, fine. I mean, it's not a 10 out of 10. It's not a 5 out of 10. And this is what I'm saying. Like, you know, it's still entertaining to watch. It's still good TV wrestling or not bad wrestling TV, but it could be a lot better. It should be a lot better. Mariah May cuts a promo. She says you should change the H to a C in Huntsville. Mariah yells at Renee. And then basically, you know, she doesn't need to role play like Toni Storm to be the best women's wrestler in the world. This promo I gave 5.4 out of 10. It's difficult with these quick promos because, you know, the guys don't get a lot out and it's hard to sort of review it above like, well, it did the job. It wasn't a car crash. You know, it's a pass. Gun Club promo, guns up. Again, this was like a minute long video. Obviously the guns are coming back. That's good news. I've given it 5.5 out of 10. Hurt Syndicate promo, still put Private Party over and then have said that they're having an open challenge for the tag team titles. I think this is great. Doesn't need to be a tournament. As much as I love tournaments, doesn't need to be a tournament or anything fancy. Just have these guys go out in the ring and have, you know, current tag teams, because they're so big and intimidating and imposing looking that even if a team, I'm thinking of like the Outrunners here, even if they go 5-6 minutes with them, you're going to think more highly of the Outrunners because they managed to last this long with these guys. I think the Gun Club might come back and give them a real run for their money as well. Vendetta promo, we should take what we deserve, and we're going after Harley Cameron, which was on Collision, which we'll get to in a second. And then we have Mercedes Moné versus Yuka Shakagasi for the TBS Championship. This match was a bit of a nothing burger, some really nice spots in it. This was Mercedes clocking in and doing what she needed to do and then clocking out again. 6.2 out of 10. Not an overly strong Dynamite at all, really. Let's move to Collision. This was Saturday, the 1st of Feb, just over $2,000 people in Huntsville for this one. We started with Samoa Joe and Hook versus Nick Wayne and Kip Sabian. Botched spot for Kip, which is, after all this time, not surprising, but also disappointing to see. He finally gets in the ring. He's, you know, big match on Collision with Nick Wayne. He fucking botches the top rope spot within like 2 minutes. Then Nigel mentions it, you know, and again, these are like the small things that AEW does that they don't need to do that are like self-owns. Joe and Hook get the win and then they get the beatdown. The beatdown in AEW is overused. We could probably calm down on the beatdowns a little bit, I think. But this wasn't too bad besides that. 7 out of 10. Cope promo. Cope speaks some truth here. He's talking about John Moxley. He says, no one knows what your plan is. Putting a belt in a briefcase when starting on a new network. He basically is like, you fucking idiot. What are you doing? I think that's actually a really good booking point. You know, how are we meant to know that John Moxley is the champion when you're walking around with the belt in a briefcase? And then Cope says, it's me versus you for the heavyweight championship at Revolution, which is the 6th of March. I thought this was a really good promo. It's Adam Copeland, you know, but it shows the value of having someone like Adam Copeland on the roster and why he should be in the main event picture. Next up, we had Adam Priest versus Beast Mortis. Aubrey acting in the ring. Just stop. The overacting that goes on with AEW referees is a bugbear of mine for years. Please stop doing it. Just from like a writing standpoint or even just a direction standpoint, you're a wrestling referee. So think about the motivation of you as a wrestling referee. You're a tenured wrestling referee. Why would you be freaking out clutching your pearls when you see someone do a German suplex? It should be like buttering a piece of toast. It should be nothing. It shouldn't affect you at all. And, you know, squirming around on the floor to get your face right in the center of the screen. Like, just stop. Just stop. Mortis wins the squash. Platinum comes out and says he could kill Mortis. Max then says he's going to have an open challenge. And then Rush comes out. There's a squash match for some reason. And then a really atrocious promo from Rush. All up, I gave this 4 out of 10. Really confused. Mortis is back with Rush and El Dracistico. I just want to point out that promo being in Spanish, that's fine, but it was half in English, half in Spanish. It sort of was stop, start, stop, start. You've just had Mortis is back with those guys. That's fine. I've seen so many false starts from Rush. I'm probably a bit tired of seeing him. I think you could probably just let him go and that would be fine. He's not going to get, if he goes to WWE, he's not going to get used well anyway, because you know, he's a Latino, and they don't use Latino wrestlers well. You know, why, you'd have to ask the people who run that company. I'm saying they should, by the way, right, that they shouldn't be booking people on the color of anyone's skin, but we all know that the Fed have problems in that area. But anyway, the biggest problem with all of this is that Maxcast has just split. The Acclaimed have just split. This promo the week before was the hottest thing on either of the two shows. The Acclaimed are a beloved team in AEW. This is AEW's The Rockers splitting. And then the next week you have Maxcast squashed by Roosh, who's barely been around and has been a complete pain in the ass to do business with, apparently, whenever he has been. I don't know what's going on here. It's very rare that I'll say flat out this is just atrocious booking from Tony, but this is atrocious booking from Tony. Next up, we had the Outrunners versus Chris Jericho and the Bad Apple. Learning Tree get the win. They start to beat down the Outrunners. Bandido, for some reason, comes out for the save. Now, I would have had a higher score for this match as well, because the actual in-ring wrestling, not bad. But just the beat down and then the save, it's the same thing every time. We need to start having some clean wins. We need to have the tension built in promos. It can't just be shown. Like, I think someone might have told people at AEW, you've got to show, not tell. In wrestling, it's actually not the case. You definitely show, but people want a bit of tell as well, because just watching beatdowns at the end of every match doesn't equate to stories or storytelling or world building. There's an Okada promo. Buddy Matthews walks up to Okada and says he's too chicken to wrestle him. Okada says that you're not getting a shot. And then Buddy basically says, you're a bitch. And then Okada says, I'm not a bitch. You're the bitch. This has been happening a couple of weeks now. This is leading to Buddy getting a shot at Okada in Brisbane, I'm hopeful of, which would mean that I get to see Will Ospreay, Kenny Omega, and Okada all on the same card, plus the Aussie crew, which will be great. And Tony Storm, and Mariah May, and Mercedes Money. I mean, not bad. It's a pretty good indication of how stacked this roster is, that they could essentially send like a quarter of the stars on the roster, and it's a dream card for me, you know. But then there's all these other wrestlers that I won't get to see. Like, you know, there's probably no Adam Copeland, there's probably no John Moxley, there's probably no MJF. You know, if you heard that, you would be inclined to think it would be a disappointing show. But then, you know, the other half of the roster are coming, and it's some of the best wrestlers of all time. Harley Cameron versus Taya Valkyrie. Taya gets the running here early on. The crowd are well and truly behind Harley. It's a testament to how well she has done with the very, very limited time that she's been given. Just to give you an idea of how far back Harley started, she was part of QT Marshall's group when she first got a gig in AEW. And I suppose you've got to give some credit to QT Marshall for getting her on TV and, or at least, you know, being around when she was first on TV. But she owned a lot of those QTV sketches. She was super funny in a lot of those, and it's just built on the back of that. She is most likely, by the looks of it, going to get a match against Mercedes Moné for the TBS title in Brisbane, which is just a huge... You can't, you know, in a year and a half, 2 years that she's been on the roster, that is just an absolutely phenomenal leap to go from QTV to wrestling Mercedes Money in at a pay-per-view for a belt. But it is a testament to giving people a chance and then booking them on the back of crowd reaction, which, again, I don't know if AEW does as well as they could with that stuff. Come back to Cameron in this match, Mr. Senton, roll up and gets her first win on AEW television. We cut to Deanna Purrazzo, who storms off in a half. Harley's over the moon. The crowd chants, Harley, Harley. I'm going to give this 7.7 out of 10. I thought it was a pretty good match. I thought the booking is great. I thought the cutting to backstage and showing Deanna Purrazzo being pissed off, good, right? A little bit of story there, building for other stuff. Let's keep that going. Ricochet promo. This was the promo that I was talking about when we were on Dynamite. This is a really good promo. It's a good promo where Ricochet whinges a bit, Swerve interrupts, asks Renee to leave. They sit right next to each other face to face. He says Ricochet is a fake. Ricochet says he's right and that he can't cut a promo on things he doesn't believe in. Basically saying he's a natural heel. Swerve grabs Ricochet's scissors out of his pocket and holds them to his neck and then says, I'll see you in Atlanta. This was a fantastic promo. This was, you know, I think this is why people get very frustrated with AEW, because you can go from a lot of nothing burgers and then all of a sudden this just appears out of nowhere and you've got a world-class promo happening. This story has bubbled along quite nicely. You know, the last promo on Dynamite, was fine and I was kind of a bit dismissive of it, but the quality of the work being done by Ricochet and Swerve for the most part has been at this level, and I am super excited to see them go to head-to-head this week on Dynamite. Next up we had, I thought the rest of Collision was actually pretty good. Toni Storm promo, she says she's been playing the young girl in the red shorts, that was her the whole time, which got a laugh from the crowd. She was embarrassed when Mariah beat her for the belt. And then she said she had to build herself back up so she could look Mariah May in the eye. Cut a really good promo and then huge bows at the end as the camera panned around her. And the crowd chants Tony. I thought this was a really good promo as well, just building towards Mariah and Tony in Brisbane. 7 out of 10. Harley and Mercedes promo. So Harley Cameron's back doing double duty on the same episode. She's now got a Mercedes puppet and is doing ventriloquism, actually doing Mercedes accent pretty well and throwing a voice at the same time. Puppet Mercedes grants Harley a title match in Brisbane. The real Mercedes shows up, says, this is all very cute. You're not getting a title shot. Go away. I thought this was really, really great. 7 out of 10. Next up, we have Kyle O'Reilly versus Danny Garcia versus Lee Tiger Star. Moriarty. Why couldn't I say Moriarty? We get some good three-way wrestling here. Interference from Shane Taylor kept Kyle out of the match at the end. Danny wins with a roll-up. And then there's an Adam Cole run in to shoo off Shane Taylor Promotions. I don't know, this, even though as I was watching it, I was like, this is all a bit meh. By the time I sort of finished my scoring, I was at 8.2 out of 10. There was a lot of good spots here. People wrestled well. There was a big pop when Adam Cole hit the ring. I don't think people expected to see Adam Cole in Collision. Great stuff. Megan Bain versus Hyena Hira, squash match. Megan Bain looks like a talent, 6 out of 10. Statlander apologizes to Willow in a promo. Willow doesn't accept the apology. Well, there's something going on here. I don't mind this. This is continuous storytelling off the back of years of history. That's what you have as a wrestling promotion. Use it. You don't have to keep coming up with new storylines. You can go back on stuff that's happened before and then develop those stories. 6.5 out of 10. And then we finished the show. And this was another one where as I was watching, I was like, this feels like a bit of a mess. And then when I finished rating it. I had a good score for it. Moxley and Yuta versus FTR in a street fight, essentially, a hardcore match. FTR jumps the Death Riders. There's a nice thumbtack spot by Mox. Dax used a hook on Mox's cock. There's a big old hook that came from somewhere, and Dax grabbed it and just shoved it right up the clacker of Mox. And then Marina Shafir interferes and grabs Dax by the cock and balls and appears to try and rip it off. So there's a lot of dick grabbing going on. Dax puts Marina through a table. Claudio interferes while Dax has a chokehold on Mox. Cope and JY come down for the save after the Death Riders were about to kill Cash. The good guys were going to hit a concerto, but Claudio comes back in and saves Moxley, his lieutenant saving his captain. So all in all, I've given this 8.3 out of 10. Although I think I'm probably being slightly generous with that, but because it was a bit messy and the run-in stuff was just reading through that, my immediate feedback for the creative team at AEW is like, we've got to pull back on the the run-ins, man. Like it's a lot. But having said that, you know, if you're still with me and you're listening to this, you know, the vast majority of those matches and segments are still good quality stuff. It's not bad. It's not repulsive. It's not end of WCW stuff or end of ECW or ECW and WWE stuff. It is good quality weekly television. And to me, it puts pay a little bit to the stuff that is like, you know, instantaneously and non-surprisingly put out every Thursday about AEW and how poor everything is in AEW. It's not. There are some storytelling problems, but fuck, man, I've watched some WWE recently as well. You know, they're not killing it over there either. Because some things work and some things don't, you know. Anyway, I suppose just to cap the episode off, it's been good doing this again. It's felt nice to talk about wrestling and not put too much pressure on myself to, you know, try and come up with reinvent the wheel or anything. I'll just talk about the match, give it a score, and if there's anything that really needs to be talked about, then you can. But otherwise, you know, just talk about the shows. There are a couple of things that I just wanted to sort of go over before I end the show. Seeing a lot of reports about how no one's bought tickets for Brisbane, blah, 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 blah. Now, obviously, ticket sales were slow for the first venue, but they had sold about 10,000 tickets for the first venue. The second venue holds 14,000 people. So at the very least, there's going to be at least 10,000 people in this arena. And the last time I checked, I actually work in the industry. I'm not going to talk about who or where I work for, but I do work in the industry. And the last time I checked, it looked like there was maybe, and this was just going off by eye, looking at seating maps on the ticket carrier's website, but to my trained eye, it looked like maybe about 1,000 seats were left. So I'd say about 13,000 seats are being sold in a 14,000 seat arena. By the time the show comes around in a couple of weeks, I know they're doing two for ones and stuff, but that's what they'll be doing to try and fill those last 1,000 seats or whatever. But if they do that, that'll be 14,000 for a show in Brisbane, which is the third biggest market in Australia, but a very small one on a global scale. WWE did a show in Perth the year before, probably pretty comparable, Brisbane and Perth, as far as population and all that kind of thing. And they did 35. So, yes, WWE is ahead of the game, but they're a 45-year-old, they're 45 years older as a company, they've got established names. It's a bit of a shame that AEW didn't do this show in Sydney or Melbourne. I think you could have easily, if he did it in Melbourne, he could have easily sold out the arena that the Australian Tennis Open is in, which holds about 20,000 people. And that would have been a really positive result. We wouldn't have had any of this bullshit backlash. It would have been like, oh shit, Australia, they've done a 20K house in Australia. That's pretty good. But even still, a 14K house in Australia as the second wrestling promotion in the world for the first time in Australia, the lens that's seen through is insane to me. That, like, oh, this is a complete abject failure. Okay. Well, I'll let you know how much of a failure it is when I'm in there with a full house and it's absolutely rocking. Also, have noticed no news about Kevin Owens. Right? Had the big heavyweight match at Royal Rumble. Still no news about his contract. You know, was written off TV. I don't know. The logo for Revolution in LA, it looks a little bit like someone's shirt. I don't know if you've... someone's Ring of Honor shirt. Maybe. Maybe. Who knows? Anyway, you heard it here first. Kevin Owens, AEW. Or it'd be Kevin Steen. Thanks for listening to this, guys. It's nice to do this. For some reason, it makes me feel calm. If you like the podcast, you can follow me on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. Rate and review the podcast. That'd be great. Tell your AEW friends about it. Get in your Reddit rooms and all that kind of stuff. It's very late here. I can't remember the names of everything. You know, go on Reddit, tell people about it. Go on Blue Sky, tell people about it. You know, do a TikTok post, whatever it is. Say, hey, man, there's a guy who just does reviews of Collision and Dynamite, and he's pretty evenly handed about it, but is also parochial because he's an AEW guy. Anyway, I'm going to leave that there. Nice even hour for you. Thank you for listening. I'll be back next week with another episode of WrestleWolf wrapping up AEW.